You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everybody. This is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We are talking everything you can talk about with the tabletop games, the card games, the board games, and everything on this Thursday, the 5th of April, episode 207, proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. We were just in there early. I spent some money. You guys go in there too and spend all your money and tell them that we sent you. Now, lads, at the moment, the Commonwealth Games is on in Australia.
Is it?
Yes. Now, being a proper nerd, I have no idea about this whatsoever, and I plan on keeping it that way. However, if we were to design a Commonwealth or even Olympic Games board game, this is absolutely on the fly.
Yep.
What do you? How do you think we'd go about doing it? I thought maybe the game Colosseum would be a good base.
That'd work.
For some sort of Olympic, because it's got all the different type of things, and it's, I mean, you probably don't want to be betting on stuff. That's a bit out of the spirit of it.
Well, I think you've got to draw a little bit from City of Horror, because they have those little needle bits of cardboard. So surely you've got to introduce some illegal doping in there.
Yeah, well,
oh dear.
That makes the logical sense. Yes, Mark, any ideas?
Look, I'd do it with a whole bunch of mini games.
Yep.
So maybe it'd be like, remember, Garth, you might remember this at BorderCon a few years ago, Dr. Panic?
Oh, yes, of course.
So maybe you'd, with all those mini games, maybe you'd have like a running mini game, a jumping mini game, swimming mini game,
horse riding. That would actually be good because you could get
riding mini game.
Every person that's playing, you could get to represent a different country. And when like a bell goes off, you've got to run to a different event. And then all of a sudden, Russia's competing with Australia. And then another bell goes off, and you go over and Croatia's competing with something else at the same time.
Or maybe it's like the sort of the heptathlon or the decathlon where you've got 10 events and they're all adding up to who wins. I don't know.
But that, I think that's a decent base just off the top of their
head. Sounds pretty good. But more importantly, what have we got on this week?
Well,
some sort of show, I'd imagine.
We're going to talk about some of the games we've been playing lately, Garth, including very exciting new-ish game, Mountains of Madness, a couple of other smaller games we've been playing. Leon,
hello.
He's been up to all sorts of things, and we're going to hear what some of the stuff he's been up to and what some of the stuff he's going to get up to.
Yes, mainly an early midlife crisis by the look of me today.
Yeah, very much so.
Well, I wasn't going to mention the blue hair.
The blue rinse, as they call it in the nursing home.
Yes, and the spiky face mask.
And the spiky face mask, which we may have to put up a little Instagram post on that just because it's Leon in the studio
with a spiky face mask on.
Sounds like Burn.
Sure, everyone wants to see that.
Yep. Anyway, thanks, Area 52. We'll throw to a song and then Mark.
Yep.
Yes, Mark, you are going to tell us all about Mountains of Madness. Well, that was Girlpool with She Goes By. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And now, in his long overdue, completely coherent rules explanation and description of a game, Mark Rickards.
Which he bought the game from Area 52, by the way.
Oh, he did?
Yes, and it was a good price too. Well done, lads.
Okay.
Wow, we've thrown him. Or is this, is this your normal, unprepared?
I'm getting into kinder character here.
It's called Gravitas, Garth, which I will edit out later.
1931, your scientific expedition discovers a new and intriguing mountain range in the middle of the Antarctic Polar Circle. Under these challenging conditions, the survival of your team will depend on your ability to communicate with each other and to coordinate your efforts to overcome each obstacle. But what you discover on the way to the highest peak will strongly test your mental health. Will you even be able to understand yourself, despite the madness that gradually insinuates itself into your mind? So for those who don't know, Mountains of Madness, or The Mountains of Madness, was the name of a novella by H.P. Lovecraft, a well-known one. A lot of people know the title. Not many people have read it, as I found out, because it's really got nothing to do with Cthulhu. When people think about H.P. Lovecraft, they, of course, think about Cthulhu. But this is not about Cthulhu.
No, there are other things other than Cthulhu. It's like when you think of Sesame Street, people just think of Elmo. No, there are other better ones.
Yes, I got one word for you.
I don't know why Sesame Street was the analogy I went with there, but I did.
Shoggoth.
Yes, yeah, Shoggoth to you too, Mark.
None of them on Sesame Street.
There's no need for that. Well, there might be these days. You never know.
So loosely...
It's a very inclusive street.
Yeah,
so.
Fair true.
Keep going.
Loosely based on the H.P. Lovecraft novella, Mountains of Madness is a fully cooperative game with a pinch of real-time gameplay in there with your little sand timer.
Yeah.
The game is designed by Rob Davial, the famous Mattel and Hasbro... Not Mattel, Hasbro game designer who's now brought legacy into the world. And the art in this beautiful art, I must say, by Miguel Coimbra, and the original release by Yellow.
Yellow!
With
Yellow!
A small eye. So in this game, you are cooperatively travelling up a mountain and escaping out of Antarctica on your little plane. And, I must say, you get a beautiful little plane.
A pre-painted plane mini.
It's the sort of thing I love to see in games, something pre-painted that, look, it could be a wooden token, but just because you've got a little painted plane, it just adds to the gameplay. So what you're not trying to do is you're trying to navigate your way up this mountain, gather artifacts from ancient aeons ago that have been left by the old ones, not go completely mad and escape with those artifacts before you get so wounded and so lost on the mountain that you perish.
Yeah.
How do you do this, you ask, Garth? Well, let me tell you.
Please do.
You do it in five phases, of course.
Oh, like all good expeditions, you each have a player aid that tells you exactly
what
to do.
That's right. You will move.
Uh-huh.
You will encounter. You will resolve.
You will.
You will draw.
Oh, I like drawing.
And then you may or may not rest. So movement, of course, is moving to a space on the mountain. So you're moving, you can move up, you can move across. And what you've got on the mountain, it's beautifully laid out on this mountain board. You've got lots of tiles. And so when you land your plane on the tile...
Why is a dead donkey on a plane?
I don't know. The same reason you're using a plane to scale a mountain.
It's a very good
That's
point.
Right. Well, in the story, you see, they fly over the mountains in the plane. They look down and see these hidden, amazing hidden things. Then they land the plane and they explore.
And this is where it starts. You start at the bottom of the mountain.
That's
you
right.
start on the coast.
Yes.
And it must be said that the board is basically the mountain where it goes from... Six tiles to five tiles to four tiles to three
yeah,
tiles
it's
to
like
two
a
tiles
pyramid.
To the one tile at the end, and you're trying to start at the bottom and go all the way to
a
the
pyramid
top.
Shape. So you've got coast tiles, you've got what are the next ones? City tiles? No,
it's mountain tiles.
Mountain tiles, then city tiles. The picture didn't have them here. I was on an earlier page. and so on each of these tiles, you have a number of challenges that you have to fulfill. Now, this is part of the encounter phase, and it's in the encounter phase that all the interesting stuff happens.
Is it ever? This is where this actually becomes a game?
Yes.
Because when Mark kind of expertly explains it, you're probably sitting there going, this doesn't sound very fun. Why do I want to scale a mountain that's not K2?
Well, let's...
Because K2 is the mountain climbing game.
Let's hold back judgment until we get to the end
right.
and we know all about it. So,
okay.
So after you decide which tile you're going to move to, the leader... We'll flip the tile, and at the same time, someone else, or the leader, depends who's in charge, will flip a 30-second sand timer. So now you have 30 seconds to solve these challenges. Now,
right.
What the challenges are, you have four types of things.
Basically four suits of items,
yeah.
Isn't it? So you've got crates.
Yeah.
You've got tools.
Yep.
You've got books.
Guns and books.
Books
they're,
and weapons.
They're the four things that you use to solve these challenges. They're, as you said, they're like four suits of cards, and you'll have a hand of four cards or maybe more if you've got different player count, but when you've got four players, you've got four cards. And you're playing these suits. These cards all have numbers on them. I think the lowest one is about two, up to a maximum of 10. And you basically have to play a certain number of a certain things. And now usually there'll be two challenges. Sometimes there'll be three. Sometimes they will say you need a range. So you might need between 7 and 10 guns, or you might need 8 guns or 6 boxes or 6 plus boxes or crates, whatever you want to call them.
You need to call them crates.
Crates, right. So six, it might say 6 plus. So it might have an exact number or a range or above. or maybe even below sometimes. And so you have these number of challenges. You have to complete at least one challenge to get a reward. Now, your rewards might be these artifacts that we talk about, which are the things you need to win the game, but also send you mad.
They do.
Or you might, your reward might be you're able to heal and get rid of some of the injuries that you start off with a few of them in your deck, but as things go bad, you will get more injuries.
And although this is not a deck filler, the easy way, deck builder, the easy way to describe an injury card is it just clogs up your hand, serves no purpose. You can get rid of it.
Yes.
But it just goes into the communal discard pile, which then gets shuffled back in and will form parts of the hands again.
But basically, the more injuries you have, the more artifacts you need. Because you need to have artifacts equal to or greater than the number of injuries you have and successfully escape to win the game. Another reward you can get is you can get an ability to search up higher up the mountain and check out one tile. You get to get some of your leadership tokens back. Did I mention leadership tokens? Not yet. I didn't, but I will. You get some, what's it called? Equipment that's like super equipment.
I think Mark's already at level one, man.
He's getting there. He's going to level two.
I can't remember what it's called. The super equipment, the fungal honey. What's the fungal honey called?
Don't say fungal honey out of context.
Arcane equipment, which is basically a 10 of one of those suits of gear.
Yeah, because the base cards do not go up to 10. Yeah. They go up to maybe 7 or 8. So, yeah part of you can get a reward that will allow you to get a 10 card value, which is incredibly powerful.
Yeah. Yes.
The further up the mountain.
And the challenges you get up to near the top of the numbers are much bigger, so you need to collect those cards and get as much stuff as you can.
So basically, the sand timer is flipping over, and you might have 6 to 10 crates, 5 to 7 guns. All of a sudden, the discussion starts, because the encounter phase, where the timer's on, is the only time you can discuss what cards you have in terms of their numbers.
Oh, like, it's completely open. I can be holding cards and say, Leon, I've got 7 crates and I've got 4 boxes. What have you got? Mark, what have you got? And so what have you got? So it sounds pretty simple. 30 seconds to get those numbers. Piece of cake.
7 crates and 4 boxes this week.
Yeah. Well, I'm maybe mad.
I'm doing a smacking explanation of this.
However, the wrinkle of this game is that there are madnesses.
I think we've encountered those.
And the madnesses only take effect in the encounter phase. So while the timer is running, you have to play out whatever your madness is. And there are level 1, level 2, and level 3
This is
madnesses.
Where you have to role play.
Yeah. And the level 1s can be, I mean, I don't want to spoil it too much, but they can be very, very simple things. Like you can't say numbers out loud, you've got to hold up your fingers.
Yes.
As an example.
Or you might have to hold your cards Hanabi style.
Yeah.
Where they're facing away from
the other
you.
Way. Yeah. Or you might have to like itch yourself or something silly like that. The level 2 madnesses will take it up a notch and they can be quite crazy. And the level 3 madnesses, let us not even go there.
Yes, because the level 3 madnesses go from just being annoying or funny little things you're doing to actually hindering your gameplay.
Oh, yeah. Dramatically.
Absolutely.
Dramatically. Yeah. And this is where this game actually becomes fun.
Well, this is the game. If you took these cards out of this game,
yeah, exactly. Everyone describes their colour and goes,
yeah, basically. Yeah.
And so you might think, 30 seconds, that's easy when you're able to discuss the cards. But once the madnesses tend to muck things up, you then have to think about, do we need extra time? Now, I mentioned the leadership chips. So there's a sled, because it's very thematic. The leader has in front of them a sled.
As
a
in
sleigh.
A dog sled?
Yeah. And on that is a pile of leadership chips, very lovely, beautiful, sort of poker-style chips.
Very much like your Splendor tokens.
Yeah, that's right. And the leader can do certain things with those chips. Now, one of the things they can do in the encounter phase is they can flip a chip to give you another 30 seconds.
Which is incredibly important.
And sometimes
half of the game.
Yeah, with the level 1 madnesses, you don't need that. But towards the end, you find you probably need it almost every time. Because, did I mention, you only need to succeed in one challenge to get the reward. But for every challenge you don't succeed in, you either have to someone has to take a new level of madness,
yep.
So going up to the next level, or you have to roll this terrible, terrible, terrible dice.
Which no one ever wants to do. To actually roll.
Because there's nothing good on it.
Well, it's called the penalty die.
Oh, so thematic.
And it has three things that can happen to you. You can have an accident, which means you draw a couple more injury cards. You get confused, which means you have to discard cards, basically between the number you were supposed to get for the challenge and the number you did actually get. Or you can lose confidence, where you have to discard two of your leadership tokens.
Which is horrible.
Now, these leadership tokens are very important because not only do they let you flip over the timer one or more extra times, they also let you in other phases draw more cards, ignore the madness of a particular player.
It can be massive.
And probably most importantly, in the rest phase, they basically discarding one, throwing out one of those completely from the game allows you to get all the other chips back, but then shuffle all the cards back into the deck again.
It's basically the leader of the expedition saying, ladies and gentlemen, we deserve a rest.
Yeah.
Let's all recharge our batteries. So that's sort of the thematics behind
it. So we covered the movement phase. We've covered the resolution phase, the encounter phase, which is the timed one, and that's where things all happen. The resolution phase is you just look at, okay, what cards were laid out?
Did we succeed or did we fail miserably?
Did we fail? Get the rewards. Take the penalties. One thing I mentioned in the encounter phase, which just makes it even a little bit trickier. So you're playing your cards onto the sled that the leader has in front of them. And so you'll be doing that during that 30 seconds. But once the very first card goes onto the sled, you can no longer communicate.
I didn't think you were aware of that rule, Mark, because you seem to ignore it quite a bit.
Well, it took me a little while to get used to it.
But I need to do the thing, and you were doing... Mark?
Yeah.
So you,
it's a card on the sled.
So when you solve the challenges, you take the rewards, you take the penalties, then you draw back up to your hand limit if there's enough cards. Then you look at, okay, do we need to rest? Do we need to shuffle cards back in and get those chips back? And rinse and repeat, leader passes
on. And that's the thing. This game is very structurally simple. It is all about the 30 seconds.
Yeah, pretty much. But I would like to mention the fact that I think that when you put the card on the sled and you can no longer talk for the rest of that round, I think that rule's completely unnecessary for this game, because the crux of this game is those madnesses and the crazy stuff that's going on. Yep. I don't know why they need to add an extra kind of penalty there for you. And also thematically, you're still trying to accomplish a goal as a team. It makes no sense that, oh, someone's got a quarter of the way to accomplishing it, now we're all just going to stop communication.
I think it's there to stop alpha gaming in
possibly.
That someone's just going, I've got 14 tools, bang, I'm just going to do that one without even communicating.
Or it could have
table.
Just been this game was play-tested through the roof and found it was too easy or something, so they've thrown this extra rule.
One of the things, of course, that we found... So I think Garth, you and I have played this game three times
at
now.
At least, yeah.
And Leon, I think you've played twice.
Yep.
So those first two times we played this game, we played it wrong.
Yeah, we did.
So we thought, if you succeeded on one challenge... You got the reward, as it says in the rules, but you didn't get the negative thing for the challenge.
But we only
you didn't
played
pass.
It wrong because you were teaching us.
Yes, that's correct. Well, I did follow an online video which didn't seem to really make it clear about the failures. And, of course, we played it the first time and went, hey, this is really easy.
Yeah,
what's all this about?
Yeah.
Not much of a game in this.
Don't even know if we saw a level 3 madness in the first time we played it.
Well, funnily enough, when we played it on the weekend...
Yeah.
And we decided to play by the rules.
We played by the rules... We all had level 3 madnesses, and I think we were only about halfway up the mountain.
This game chewed us up.
And we got our butts absolutely kicked, completely ran out of chips, hopelessly lost. But I was still, for me, I still had a ball. So you're going up through the tiles. You've got one special tile at the top, which is called the Edge of Madness. Usually that will have multiple challenges and difficult ones. And then you have three little escape tiles, which are more challenges, but you're not going to get any good stuff usually. You might get to heal, but you've got to have all the artifacts you need basically before you leave the mountain.
Yeah, because very simply, you've got to end up the game with more artifacts than the injuries.
That's
and every
right.
time you fail, especially when you are already capped out on all players having level 3 madnesses, rolling that penalty die is horrible, because if you have to put two more injuries in there, that's two more artifacts you've got to find, which is enormous.
So basically...
Because every time you find a tile, whether or not you succeed or don't, it comes off the board.
Yes.
So there's only a finite number of rewards you're ever going to find. And that's what we found in our last game, is that it was very touch and go whether or not it was even worth trying to scale this mountain to get out, because it was like, we're probably
don't,
stuffed.
That's right. You don't get a second chance at any of those artifacts. You only get one shot at them.
Yeah.
And I totally forgot what I was going to say.
That's a good radio, Mark.
But also, the game's not very long.
No,
so
it's not.
It plays at quite... Once you've learned the rules, which there ain't that many of us, learned the rules correctly, I should say.
Yeah.
Then when you play it, it takes half an hour, if that, once you're kind of hammering through it. So it doesn't really matter too much if you're going, oh, we got no relics, we screwed up, because you could just play again then if you wanted.
Yeah, so basically you can... I remembered. You can lose if you run out of chips completely... You can lose if you run out of cards completely, and obviously you can lose if you all the injuries are already in the deck. It's not possible to win then. The only way you win is if you escape the mountain and you've got your injuries less than or equal to the number of artifacts you have.
So let's
plays
talk about these.
In, I would say, less than 60 minutes, once you know what you're doing, moves along at quite a clip.
So let's talk very briefly about these madnesses, because it is the whole purpose of the game.
Yeah.
It's what makes the game fun or not fun.
Yeah.
Now, I've looked through every single madness in the box, there are some really, really good ones, and there's some really, really stupid ones.
There is.
And this is where, for me, a house rule would have to be, if you get a madness that is just stupid... Put it at the back of the deck, take another one, and have fun, because this is not a game that you need to alpha game and you need to worry about and play it hard and fast. It's about having fun and especially going a bit stupid with your friends.
Yeah.
There are certain madnesses that I just think they're just not fun at all.
Yeah, it's not far off a party game that just happens to have a board and takes a little bit longer than a party game.
Yeah.
And I had one madness in one case that I said to everyone... This madness is going to make me not enjoy this game. It's going to. I'll be happy to say what it was. It was. I think it said you can't use adjectives. I want to say.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie. I absolutely have a blind spot in my brain for verbs and adjectives and the difference between them all.
Just words generally.
And I'm good with words and such and whatnot. That's because I'm on the radios now and famous and stuff. But I said to everyone, I said this card is going to. It's not that I don't want to do it. This is going to make me uncomfortable and not enjoy this game, and which is the exact opposite of why we play games all. So we put that back. Somebody else might have a ball with that card, but it just wasn't for me.
Yeah, and look, there are some blank cards that come with the game, so you can write your own level 1, level 2, level 3 madness. Like, I'm not that sort of person to make up my own game rules to games, because I like the rules that come with them.
Mostly
when I read them.
Yeah, okay. And how many different times can you write down, whip it out?
Exactly right. Must drop pants.
Yeah.
Again and again and again.
I mean, honestly, Mark, you just ask nicely instead of putting it in a game and making us play the damn thing.
Yeah, so, look, what do we think?
Well, look, I've really enjoyed it. It definitely, whilst you're not role-playing as such, you definitely got to get into your madness.
You do.
And be prepared for it to be fun and silly. I agree with what you're saying, Leon. It's sort of a party-style game, but it does only play to 5, so it's not for a big group. And it's good, because if a much bigger group than 5, it'd just be chaos.
Exactly. And the thing is, you can teach and play and finish and lose or win within an hour. Yeah. It's really quick.
It's got great production values. I did a quick unboxing video, which I put on YouTube and on our Instagram channel if people want to check it out.
Well, that's yellow in a nutshell. I don't think they've ever done a game that hasn't looked at least nice.
Oh, the little plane, the poker chips, the tiles, the whole thing looks really lovely. The art by Miguel Coimbra is super sweet. So, look, I mean, I really enjoy this game, but clearly you need the right people to play with. They're going to get into the spirit.
Yeah, well, I didn't enjoy this game. I think the madnesses are enjoyable, especially if you get cool ones that you kind of had. I had one where I had to use a finger moustache. That was really fun and stuff like that. But other than that, you take those madnesses kind of away from it, and the game itself, there's not much to it, and it's just a bit bland, and I don't think I'd be happy to want to play it again.
There's a lot of really good games that fall in the same time limit for this.
Yeah.
So it's competing with some pretty heavy hitters, I think. Look, obviously it's got the credentials of Rob Devio, which is amazing, and the madness is what it's all about. So
it's worth a try, that's for sure.
I would certainly play it, but I wouldn't buy it. That's my easy way to think about it. But anyway, that's us, the Mountains of Madness, or Mountains of Madness. We will be back after this song. We got to say thanks, Area 52, because they did provide Mountains of Madness.
After we exchanged money to them.
After we exchanged goods and services for product. And we will be back after this song. There you go. That was Superimposed, Flowers on Palestine and Broken Face with Silver Lake, who are a Tassie act, believe it or not. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, Leon.
Hello.
It was just Easter.
Twas.
Mark and I were at a game day on Monday, and you just went, stuff that, I'm not coming.
No.
And what was your excuse?
Well, I had to do a 12-hour night shift that night.
Yeah, world's smallest violin.
Yeah, that was my main, and got paid some money. Let's politely put it that way, because it's gauche to say. Yes, but during the actual day itself, what I did was I woke up and then spent about 5-6 hours playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Again?
Which is my apparently my thing that I do now. Instead
you
of
are the newly obsessed D&D person, aren't you?
People just want me. What can I say? So this is the third campaign.
They do?
The third campaign I am now involved in.
Yep.
With the Silver Bullet guys and a few other friends and my lady wife and whatnot. And yeah, Silver Bullet John, he come up with a scenario and he is our DM.
Okay.
And it's set in a world where there's this big port town where it's very eclectic, lots of different races, lots of stuff going on, a big, you know, metropolis kind of area. And we're a band of mercenaries, as you do. But the area that we're moving into, a bit further into the map, is mostly just humans.
Okay.
And they're all, let's say racist, just to be completely honest. But our group... There's one human in our group,
sure.
And five people that consist of, you know, a cat lady, a Goliath, a gnome, an elf, an orc, and all sorts of madness.
You're going to have the racists.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting to see how we go. But yeah, no, we had an absolute ball. We spent the first 2 hours creating the characters, and we all created them from scratch.
Yeah, wow.
Sarah knew that she wanted to be a tabaxi because, you know, she is a cat lady in real life anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So she wanted to play one in the game. And then she thought being a bard would be interesting just because it's just something that not many people go for bards because, you know, it's not the I'm the big cool fighter or the wizard with the crazy magic, but it's definitely got some cool stuff.
Well,
we did
have someone sitting around this table who's not me or you play a bard and insisted on singing everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad I wasn't there for that.
I'm glad that you weren't there either.
Well, is that how it went, Mark?
Sometimes it went like that, Garth, but sometimes it was much more dramatic.
I mean, not even at the end of the sentence and it was annoying me.
Yeah, there you go.
That's impressive. Yeah, so she had an idea, but the rest of us, we just kind of went, nah, what are we going to do? And so we chucked the Player's Guide and Volo's Guide to Monsters and Xanathar's in the middle of the table and went, right, let's have a crack, see what we're going to do.
Yeah, right.
And we knew about where we were going in the story and we just thought, you know what, screw it. We'll all be crazy different races and we'll just see what happens.
Excellent.
And then kind of go from there. So I ended up being a Goliath. A Goliath paladin by the name of Luther.
Ooh, there we go.
Luther Wandering Hands Ugg. And
all right.
The reason why he's called Wandering Hands is because he's a traveller. And the reason it's hand is because he wants to be a healer. So he puts hand on people and heals them.
I bet he does.
So they call him Wandering Hand.
I bet they do.
And Ugg is the name of his tribe, the Uggs.
Uh-huh. Gotcha.
And yeah, so I had an enjoyable time being 8 foot tall and strength up the wazoo, but not wanting to hurt anybody. And there was one point where there was a goblin that one of my friends froze. So I picked them up for a big bear hug because I just wanted to warm them up. Mm-hmm. And I may have cracked his spine a little. And then another goblin next to me happened to be put on fire by somehow. So I may have a little bit used the cold goblin to violently put out the fire goblin. And they both just stopped moving in the process.
Oh, dear.
I thought you were going to say you extinguished the fire on the gobson with your goblin with your fire hose.
No. That would be disgraceful, Mark. I just beat them both to death.
Well, that's much more civilised.
Yeah, exactly. And and it went pretty much just like that from there because my character has an intelligence of 6, very similar
to... What about your D&D one?
Yeah. But he has a high charisma, so much like the real... The world, that's the one. But yes, no, much fun had by all. We're looking forward to the next session, although before then I've got a few other sessions in the other D&D in world. So I must say that in the last couple of months I've gone from not playing any D&D to just playing it constantly.
Exactly.
Which is a good thing, and I can now safely say that all these years where board games say, it's like D&D but a board game version of it and whatever else, nothing is like Dungeon or just role playing in general. Nothing is like actually sitting down the table and just being sitting there with your stupid voices and being creative and having a good DM tell you what's going on.
That's right.
It's very hard to beat, and it's very hard to beat the fact that you could all get, you know, a player's handbook, a Dungeon Master's thing, a bit of creativity, you know, so maybe $200 between a group of 5 or 6 people and you could be playing it for the next 50 years and need nothing else.
So, Leon, I wanted to ask you about Xanathar's Guide.
Yes.
So that has a whole bunch of what?
Most of the stuff that's in that is extra stuff for the different classes.
Mm-hmm.
So when you play a different class in D&D, be it a bard, a paladin, rogue, thief, sorcerer, whatever. Once you get to level 3, which a lot of people insist on starting their campaigns on, because that's when your character gets kind of really interesting.
Yeah.
In this newest one, we started on 1, because there were a few people that there that hadn't played before at all, to give them the feel, and then we're going to get to level 3 pretty quickly, and then you can kind of move on. But once you hit level 3, all the different characters kind of, they have, it's essentially a subclass, but it's not called that. It's like your fighters will then decide, are they going to be a gladiator?
Yeah,
are they
sort of specialise?
Are they going to be... Yeah, there's like 3 of them in the base games, but in the Xanathar Guide, they add, I think it's at least 3 to every single class as well. So like the fighters, you now get to choose between... you can specialise in archery, you can be a cavalier, so on horseback, you can be a samurai... And all and like the bards has all these other kind of schools that they're called with the bard class, a school of swords and things like that. So you can use all of them, as well as it's got a few other bibs and bobs in it. It's kind of like the Player's Handbook Volume 2, Xanathar's Guide.
So it's giving you a lot more options.
Yeah, and same as how Volo's Guides to Monsters is like the Monster Guide Volume 2. So they're books that, you know, pretty much they are essentially now core books that you might as well, if you're going to get into it, you might as well get them as well. Like, I would recommend anyone who got into D&D today, I'd say, well, get a Player's Handbook and then get Xanathar's Guide, like, straight away.
So does it have extra sort of new classes?
No, it just extends those classes.
Okay.
But the thing is, those classes, once they're extended, they become so much different.
Very different.
It's insane. Like I said, the difference between a knight and a samurai is a huge difference. And between like a dark holy knight and something else, it's completely different. And we've also, with the Volo's Guide to Monsters, that has some different races in it. That's where we got I'm a Goliath and Sarah's a Tabaxi, and that's where you've also got your Triton, so like your merfolk in there as well. So between all that, you've just got unlimited combinations, really.
Are there more spells? Do you know?
Yeah, well, there. There are in Xanathar's Guide. There are new spells. There are new spells for the new subclasses.
Maybe magic items and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's
all
in there. But also, one of the best things about Xanathar's is in the last half of the book is there's heaps of different character traits that you can have, like backstory stuff, and it's all for every different class. Like Sarah's one, she found it specifically helpful for her bard. There was heaps of things that you could roll a d6 for or a d10 for, and it would say, you know, you're good with this instrument, or this has happened to you to pass when you're an entertainer, and just heaps and heaps of backstory.
Yeah.
Because some people are crazy creative and they want to come up with every single thing, but that's not always everybody. Like Sarah was, she's creative enough as it is, but she was, you know, still a bit nervous about playing for the first time.
Yeah.
And I showed her this book and I just said, look, I gave her a D6 and I said, roll that 5 times for me. She rolled it 5 times and I said, okay, so you are now a bard who, this happened to you once, this is your most famous song, this is where you came from, this is how you grew up.
Yeah.
And I said, that right there, I just said, you could use that if you wanted and not have to create a single thing for yourself and go nuts.
Awesome.
So it's pretty much foolproof. If you've got a good DM that knows the game relatively well mechanically and is creative with the storytelling, you're unstoppable.
And that's what I like about D&D is there's just so much material to draw from, especially for someone like myself who doesn't generally get excited about the character creation side of things.
Yeah.
It just doesn't hold my interest. I'm more than happy to play a pre-gen character for the most part.
Yeah.
Give it a couple of tweaks. But it's also very good that you were sitting around a table with a mix of experienced players and first-timers.
Yeah.
So that it wasn't daunting, everyone could ask questions, and that the newer players especially could get their characters tuned the right way.
But see, I'm the exact opposite, that I want to create every single thing myself, and you would have noticed in the games you've played with me, I want to do the stupid voices.
Yes.
And all that. Whereas some people are just like, I'm not comfortable with that, I just want to be pretty much me and the stuff that you give me, which is fine. And even for the DMs itself, like I said, they need to have a relatively good bit of creativity. But you've got all the books like your Tomb of Annihilation and your, you know, Into the Abyss and all these kind of modules for the story. So you don't even need to be that creative in coming up with a world if you don't want to. You can just buy one of these awesome books like the Tomb of Annihilation campaign. That'd take you like a whole year worth of play sessions to get through because it's that thick.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say is that, you know, you look back at what some of the things that Will said in the studio last week. For him, where he's playing with a group of like 10 to 12-year-olds, he can be extremely rigid when he needs to be to guide people along a path and not have them go all over the place. But when you need to apply that flexibility, you've got the ability to do that. And I know there are a lot of systems that can do that, but I guess there's so much content now and the rules are so streamlined that it's really easy to go from that very constrained to the, you know, almost infinitely imaginable world and there are rules to help you through that as much or as little as you need to.
Yeah, and between all that and all the videos that are on your Twitch and your YouTube and stuff to that, that's how I learnt how to play Dungeons & Dragons, and that's how I got enthusiastic about it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really have to read much of the player's handbook at all when it actually came to rules, because I knew them all from just watching a campaign that I watched on YouTube.
Yeah, okay.
So like most of the stuff when we, you know, learn rules videos from YouTube, which, you know, we probably should stop doing and read more rule books, but, you know, it's a pain in the ass sometimes to read a rule book. But yeah,
it sure is. So, all right, so we've looked back. Looked at your Easter weekend.
Yes.
There's some other thing happening this weekend, isn't there?
Yes, it's WrestleMania weekend. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is.
Men in tights, eh?
Yeah. Hey, don't be ridiculous. There's women in tights, too.
Well, everyone in tights is good. We're all inclusive. What else are you doing, Leon?
Well,
specifically on Saturday.
On Saturday, what we're doing is we're going to go to the pub,
hey!
The New Sydney Hotel, so our local that we've talked about for many years, and we're going to go there for 12 hours. In a big room full of a lot of my friends, and we're going to play board games and probably drink quite a bit. And considering I've touched one pint this year, which was for our 200th episode, and haven't touched a drop of booze for the rest of the year because I've been doing a bit of a health kick, which, exactly. as you can see, is working rather
Indeed.
Well.
Indeed. That's why he covers his face with his big masks.
Well,
to cover your beautiful new skin.
No, it is 20 kilos lighter, but whatever.
That's good, man.
Damn right it is. Oh, yes,
this is for not my positive affirmation show. This is board gaming, dude.
Yes, indeed. So we're going to go to the pub. And it's something I recommend for a lot of people that they kind of get overwhelmed at, like, yeah, my birthday's coming up. Some people are like, well, you should do something. And it's like, nah, I can't be asked. Get a whole bunch of people around. Say to them, I want a board game day. I want to invite, even if you've got two mates or you've got 20 mates, we're going to go to the pub or bring them around our house and just play games all bloody day. We've done it. This would be the third time I think I've done it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I'm going to spend any of my other birthdays other than this, really, because it does exactly what you need to do.
Well, the great thing is you can bring along a pile of your favourite games.
I think you'll find.
Yeah, and you can have games that play four people, and you can have games that play 40 people, depending on how many people you've got. And as has happened in those previous days,
yes,
people break up into little groups if they see something, go, oh, I really want to try this. There's usually someone there that has played at least one of those games. Mm. You can get, like, hopefully this weekend we're going to get Dead of Winter,
yes,
Warring Colonies to the table, because we're going to have a big group of people.
We are going to definitely going to be doing that, I can guarantee it, and we're going to have 11 people playing it. And I am going to be the lone wolf, I'm telling you that right now. I've claimed it. It's not going to be random. It's going to be me.
I'm not going to be Cub.
It's my birthday. You damn well do what you're told. But I've got a whole bunch of other games that I've been waiting to go big groups
on. So, what's on the pile of shame that's going to happen?
I've got the new Deception Murder in Hong Kong expansion, which came from Kickstarter.
And that's obviously good with a large, not a super large, but a decent number of players.
Yeah, like five or six is good, but we might get even more. I've got Tortuga.
Okay.
Which I've had for quite some time.
And that looks beautiful.
Yeah, it's a cool little game. And that, again, you can play that with like four, but if you read the rules on it, it's definitely something you'd want to get, I think, with six or eight or something to that effect. And yeah, you've got the Warring Colonies. I've also got the new Mysterium expansion as well, which changes the game up a bit, but just adds more cards. And I'll happily play Mysterium. Mysterium is one of those games that it's good with four, and it's just as good with, like, I think eight it goes up to. So they're the ones that I've got on the pile of shame that I haven't played. But other than that...
No Pie Face this year?
Well, we'll see how that goes.
I can bring my copy.
No, that's fine. We don't have to do that. But other than that, just the good old classic party games. There'll be plenty of cash and guns and monikers and all that kind of jazz. Say anything and a bit of bang the dice game, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
What are we going to bring?
I'm going to bring my drinking liver.
Okay. Leon, are you and I going to play Fog of Love?
Well, we'll see how the night takes us, mate.
Pretty sure we won't, but we might talk about it next week anyway.
Perhaps we may.
So, Leon.
Hello.
Happy birthday in advance of you turning, 40-something?
I'm turning a brisk 31.
31.
Whoa,
that's why he started dyeing his hair.
Yes, I did.
So, thank you. Good to know that your D&D campaign has started off really well. You've no doubt killed lots of gobbies by now.
That's all we've done so far. It's pretty much just trounce on goblins.
And we will continue this inane chatter after we say, thanks, Area 52.
Thanks, Area 52.
Which, by the way, we bought all our D&D books for this campaign.
I had to get Xanathar from Andrew Swartz himself for you.
Indeed, you did.
Anyway, we're going to throw to a song and we'll be back after this. Lock on.
Coo-wee. The Anzacs need your help. Battle Sim Gallipoli is an exciting new strategy game for two players, aged 10 and up. Historically accurate units, and a detailed map put you in the boots of the Anzacs on 25 April 1915. This is a game of maneuver and strategy where you try to outsmart your opponent on the battlefield. Random event cards make every game different. Play as the Turks or the Anzacs. Playing time 60 to 90 minutes.
Hey Mark, did you know that the Gallipoli campaign lasted from February 1915 to January 1916 with more than 800,000 troops from 18 different countries fighting for control of the Dardanelles? The soldiers came from Australia, New Zealand, England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, Canada, India, Nepal, France, Morocco, Senegal, Greece, Turkey, Syria, Palestine, Egypt, Germany. Chinese-Australian Anzac sniper Billy Singh claimed 199 victims and fought a deadly duel against rival sniper Abdul the Terrible.
Hey Garth, did you know that the Midnight Oil song Blossom and Blood contains an excerpt from a speech from Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the victor at Gallipoli, who went on to become the president, prime minister, head of government, who made that famous statement about, "You mothers who sent your sons, wipe away your tears, for those who fought and those who fell become our sons as well."
Wow, that's beautiful, Mark. That's a really wonderful thing. So, of course, we are talking about Gallipoli, the board game, which is live now on Kickstarter. As a time of recording, we've got 25 days to go and it needs a bit of love from us patriotic Aussies and Kiwis and patriotic board gamers worldwide. Jump onto Kickstarter, take a look and do a search for Gallipoli, the board game. Currently, you can get not one, but two versions of this game for only $60 Australian. But it's limited to the first 50 backers, so you want to get in quick.
Hey, Garth, you know what? It's getting down to business time on this Kickstarter. There's only one thing for us to do.
What's that?
Go over the top! Let's go! Go! Garth, come on! I'll meet you in the other trenches! We'll take them out, and we'll get them with us! We'll get some more backers over the line for this amazing Aussie Kickstarter!
That's the most I've seen you run in years, Mark!
Come on, Garth! Catch up, you silly bugger! What are your legs, Garth?
They're steel springs!
And what are they gonna do?
Jump on my trampoline when I get home!
Let's go! You too can forge your national identity by backing Battle Sim Gallipoli on Kickstarter now. Only 25 days to go. Get in early and bring it home.
Okay, that was Jarrow with Kelp, the seaweed song subtitled, I don't know, on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh here for another week, sponsored by Area 52. We have got so many games we've played lately. It's been good. We've been catching up on a few games, and we played a few smaller games, Garth.
Indeed. Even though we have a room full of Mega Men, we have been playing some mini games.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Sorry, don't mind me. I'm having somewhat of a back spasm.
Oh, old man over here.
Oh, yep. There we go.
I just can't take it like I used to.
I'm all good. Let's talk about stuff.
So the first game that I want to talk about in this mini games mini section is a Game of Thrones Hand of the King, which is a game by one of our good friends, Bruno Cathala.
Oh, yes.
Who has designed a squillion million games. It's also, I forget the name of the artist. What's the artist's name, Mark?
His name is Mihailo Dimitrievski.
Perfectly
from
said.
Macedonia, although some people might know him as the Micho.
There we go. That's much easier to know.
And he has done art for what now?
He did the North Sea trilogy, Garfield Games, and now their new West Kingdoms trilogy,
which have very cool
art. Just launching. Done a heap of other games as well, but I guess those are the ones. It's quite striking. And when I started playing this, I sort of went, "Oh, this art looks really familiar," but I can't quite place it because it's different enough, but still striking enough that you sort of, when you see those other games, you go, "Ah, yes,
exactly." As soon as you
very stylized, very striking characters. I really enjoy his art.
Correct. And this is by Fantasy Flight. This game is an itty-bitty tiny box which contains 36 base cards and then 12 companion cards which go to the side of the board. And the way this game works is that ostensibly you're playing Varys and you're trying to manipulate your way through the eight different families,
houses,
seven different houses and families throughout Westeros. And that's thematically how it works. The way it mechanically works is that you start the game by shuffling the cards up and placing down a 6x6 grid.
Yeah.
And each of the cards in the 6x6 grid will be a character from the books and obviously TV show, and they will obviously belong to their house. It's very, very simple. One of the cards will be Varys.
Yeah.
And he's trying to sneak his way through that whole little collection of characters. Everyone controls Varys. He's not owned by me or you or anyone. He's owned by the player who's about to take the turn. And on your turn, all you have to do is make one very, very simple decision. You're going to move Varys in one direction.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Horizontally or vertically.
And the aim of this game is to end up with the most banners.
Yep.
Each family has a banner. The way you get a banner is by controlling the family or the house. The way you do that is by generally having the most cards of that house to yourself. Although if you are the last player to take the last card of the house and you've got the same amount as someone else, because you've taken the last one, you still get the banner anyway.
Yes.
So on your turn, you'll pick up Varys and you'll look one way or the other, up or down or left or right, and you'll go, well, he's standing next to Daenerys, who's standing next to Jon Snow, who's also standing next to Joffrey. They're all of different houses, but what do I want to collect? You'll then just move over as many cards as you want to and put Varys on top of a card. You just then very simply take all the cards of the same house that you've gone over,
yes,
including the one that you land on. You take those into your personal sort of player section and you keep going round and round the table until all of those cards disappear and Varys can't take a legal move. The way it works is at the end of the game, whoever's got the most banners wins. If it's a tie, then it's whoever has the highest numbered family is going to be the one who breaks ties. And for example, that's always going to be the Starks.
Yes.
There's 8 Starks over this board of 35 cards, not including Varys. You've then got the Greyjoys. You've got 7 cards. You've got the Lannisters, little family you might have heard of, with 6. You've got the Targaryens at 5. You've got the Baratheons at 4. You've got the Tyrells at 3. And you've got 2 little Tullys.
Yeah.
Hey, isn't it cute? They're mean guys, though.
Yes.
Must be said, those Tullys.
Yes.
So what they lack in numbers, they make up for in dastardly behaviour.
Yes, and those companion cards, so the last person that takes a card from any family off the board, you get to then have access to one of the 5 companion cards. Out of those 12, you shuffle up 5 and you put them out there, you get to take one and use one. And they are all different abilities that you'll use pretty much straight away, and they're all very thematic to the story of Game of Thrones, which
Sorry, Leon, this is where the game actually becomes thematic for a lot of players.
And it's really, really good for something like if Hodor's out there and you pick him, you get to take then Brandon Stark straight away. If Khal Drogo's out there and you take him, you get to then take Daenerys
and kill her brother.
And
spoiler alert.
Yeah, or like the one I love, Jaqen H'ghar. Like you get to kill three things, like one on the board, one in someone's hand.
And one of the other companions, so someone else doesn't pick them. And this game takes like 10 minutes, if that, and it takes about 2 minutes to teach. We played this with my family on Easter Sunday. We were having lunch, and my wife was paired with our 7-year-old niece, who we basically said, we'll pair you with her, but, you know, you can do pretty much everything. I just wanted to make sure that she got her head. And she was fine. She didn't even need Sarah to be there, to be honest. And she just said, no, I want to go here and take this card and whatever else.
Well, that's the good thing about this game as well, is that it plays 2-4, so it's an itty-bitty game.
Yep.
But you can play as individual players, or you can play 2v2.
Yeah.
Which does make it that little bit more interesting, because when you're playing one of 4 people in this game, you basically can't really make many future plans. You can really just make the best possible decision on the
very
turn.
Very tactical.
Because it's all going to be completely stuffed by the time it's your turn again. But when it's pairs and it's back and forth, you can start to come up with a bit more of a decent strategy, which is where this game just becomes that little bit more interesting.
And the thing about this is that kind of blew me away is that the art is obviously great. And it's probably the biggest theme in the world at the moment from due to popularity. It's also got one of the best board game designers in the world. But I'd seen it. I'd never heard anyone speak of it. But Josh picked it up because he loves Game of Thrones and he loves board games. And we played it. This is the best filler game I've played in God, maybe ever. This may be my favourite filler game there is. Okay. Like I said, it takes 10 minutes and every game will be different because of those companions will be different and the companions are thematic. And
yeah, and the variability of where the cards lay.
And the way people play and they think, oh, I could do this, but then someone else is going to do that. And as long as you don't sit there and try to plan out the next 10 moves in your head, which would be, you know, boring as hell.
It'd also be pointless.
Because you never know what someone's going to do. You'd be absolutely laughing.
Well, I remember just taking a very brief glance at this when it was first announced, and I was like, Game of Thrones, thinking, oh, yeah, an awesome new Game of Thrones game, because there's the other really 4, 5, 6 hour Game of Thrones game. And then I went, oh, it's a card game. It's like a 15 or 20 minute game. And I actually didn't even look at the art. I just thought, nah, it's a fiddly little card game. It's probably a pasted on theme.
Yep.
Don't even bother to look at it. And yes, I could argue, look, you could make this be many, many different things. But I agree that the way they've tied in particular the companions, the fact that you're vying for control, which is what Game of Thrones is all about. All these families vying for control, not even just between the families, but even within the families.
Yeah.
It fits so well. The art is amazing. It's vibrant. It's colourful. And it's just fun.
And as you said, as you said, all those little art cards you said before about getting two copies of the game and turning all those art cards into coasters.
I know, I love it.
It's a brilliant idea.
There we go, hey.
Yeah.
I said it first.
You love it?
Well, put it this way, I think Mark's got to order the copy of it. I've ordered the copy of it. Garth will just, he'll play one of our copies of it.
Correct.
But, well, I think I'm going to get two copies.
Yes.
So I can make my coasters.
But it's a game that, like I said, everyone's thought, oh, it's, you know, the big theme is probably going to be pasted on. It's going to be nothing. It's going to be a game you'd probably find in like a, you know, whatever store, random store that's not a board game store. It ain't going to be garbage.
But
it's good.
The theme is not so dominating that if you don't know or care about Game of Thrones, it's not going to turn you off either.
It makes
There's no graphicness to this. There's no violence. The killing is ostensibly you're just removing them. So it's not a violent situation. And as you said, so you were able to play it with a 7-year-old.
We played it with a 7-year-old niece and we just didn't say the word kill. We just said the word, like, remove, and it was fine. And it's not like there's any blood or guts or anything like that, is it? So, yeah, no, it's highly recommended. Well,
if you're curious, take a look at our most recent Instagram post.
Yes.
Because there's a photo of a few of us with the said cards from Game of Thrones, A Hand of the King.
Yeah, look, I can't say enough good things about this game. And I sort of slapped myself because I should have known Bruno Cathala is not... Look, he's no Reiner Knizia. He's not pumping out themeless mathematical puzzles that actually aren't fun. The man knows how to design a game. Apologies to the good doctor.
I was about to say,
he's designed
the most backhanded compliment I've ever seen. I'll give you a compliment while I shoot this other guy in the face.
Yeah, but look, I do not know a bad game that Bruno Cathala has designed.
Well, there you go. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. If I'm going to talk about this game, I'm going to give it 2 minutes.
Yep.
Which is not much time, but it's all we've got at the moment.
Yep.
Deep Sea Adventure by Oink Games and designed by the Sasakis. We've got Jun and we've got Goro Sasaki.
Hey.
Now, this game is itty-bitty, teensy-weensy, no yellow dot bikinis, though. It's just itty-bitty.
You could have. It's a water theme.
This is the game of up to, I think it is it six players?
Six, I think.
To six players, all playing divers trying to go down to the bottom of the ocean, get the most gold and loot and glory, and more importantly, make it up while there's still oxygen.
Is this like Subnautica, the card game, you think?
No. It comes with a tiny little bitty submarine, which is awesome, and that's where you're going to start. You then got all these little chips of various value in terms of loot and gold. Let's just call it victory points. They're going to be sort of broken down into depth layers, for lack of a better term. You're going to lay them out in any old pattern how you see fit under the submarine, and then the game begins. The way it's going to work is you just roll two dice, and the dice have 1, 2, or 3 pips on the sides. Mm. It's not your normal D6s. You roll that, and then the number of pips are revealed is how many movement you've got. You then decide to go down the chain of the various tokens getting deeper and deeper, and then you can just decide to pick up the loot and then keep going. The thing is, every time you pick up loot, the next time you roll the dice, it's going to remove one of your movement. Now, when you're rolling two dice with a maximum roll of 6, but more than likely you're going to get rolls of 2 or 3, having one of your movement taken away for every single piece of loot that you have is really, really, really bad. The other thing that starts to happen is that as soon as you pick up loot, there's a huge amount of exertion that goes along with that because you're carrying it. So you start to use up some of the collective oxygen that is on this particular ship.
And I love that it's a shared oxygen pool.
So you got maybe 25 oxygen. Now, this game should be titled Everybody Dies, especially the first time you play it.
First 10 times.
Because everyone just keeps going straight down to the bottom as far as they can because everyone's a macho diver. Yeah, I'm going to get the big loot. And then half or probably everyone won't get anywhere near the top of the boat because you've collected two or three bits of loot and every time you roll a die, you might roll a three or a two pip, which means you move nowhere.
Yeah.
You still use oxygen.
Yeah.
And everyone's using oxygen. So by the time it gets back to your turn, especially in a six-player game, some other bloody divers have used up all your air and you're stuck in the middle of the ocean dead. So the way the game works is you play the best of three rounds. I can almost guarantee after the first round everyone will be on 0 points.
Yes.
Yep.
So it then becomes the exact opposite for the second round where someone will go down maybe three tiles, pick up something and go, I'm just going back.
And that person will most likely win. And I have heard other people talk about this on various podcasts or YouTube shows, and they've pretty much everyone says the exact same thing. Every game of this is exactly the same, which annoys me because I actually played this at BorderCon of like 2 years ago, and I really enjoyed it. And then after I heard everyone's story, I went, "Oh yeah, that's exactly what happened to us." So I think that was we all went the first round, we all went down too far, all died. The next round, I went down like two levels, got the first bit of treasure, came back up, got a few points. The third round was kind of a mix of the first two, and I think I won
exactly.
And apparently, that's the way it happens every single time. So,
but I tell you what, I will happily play this game over and over again. The variability in the treasures, the variability in the dice rolls, the fact it plays 2 to 6.
Yeah.
And it's so cool on the table. It looks beautiful. It's so much fun, but it is everybody's going to die.
Yeah, and when you get to that third round, because everyone has died, everyone goes, well, I'm just going to get a treasure and go back. Then you see everyone is doing that. So then it's, I'll just go just a little bit deeper to get a slightly better treasure.
And the only thing that I haven't mentioned is when you die, you drop all your loot.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of really good value loot that might be halfway along the track or even right in the top, so you've just got to stretch it a little bit further.
Mm.
Oh, it's good fun. Anyway, that's all we've got time for. Tonight has been episode 207 of the Dice Men Cometh. It has been thanks to Area 52. Happy Easter for last weekend. Happy Leon's birthday for next weekend.
Yeah.
There is also AICon happening in Tasmania this weekend, which is a whole bunch of nerdy goodness.
Yes.
So that's going to be fun. Some of us might be there. You never know.
Possibly.
And on that note, we're over and out.
I think we've got to go and have a beer and play a game.
Indeed, we shall.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.